Translation: the Brahmanas represent his mouth, the Kshatriyas his arms, the Vaishyas his thighs, and the Sudras are born of his legs. Please repeat. The Brahmanas represent his mouth. The Kshatriyas his arms. The Vaishyas his thighs. And the Sudras are born of his legs. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. All the living beings are stated to be part and parcels of the Supreme Lord, and how they are so is explained in this verse. The four divisions of human society, namely the intelligent class, the Brahmanas, the administrative class, the Kshatriyas, the mercantile class, the Vaishyas, and the laborer class, the Sudras, are all in different parts of the body of the Lord. As such, no one is different from the Lord. The mouth of the body and the leg of the body are non-different constitutionally. But the mouth or the head of the body is qualitatively more important than the legs. At the same time, the mouth, the legs, the arms and the thighs are all component part of the body. These limbs of the body of the Lord are meant to serve the complete whole. The mouth is meant for speaking and eating, the arms are meant for protection of the body, and the legs are meant for carrying the body, and the waist of the body is meant for maintaining the body. The intelligent class in society, therefore, must speak on behalf of the body, as well as accept foodstuff to satisfy the hunger of the body. The hunger of the Lord is to accept the fruits of sacrifice. The Brahmanas, or the intelligent class, must be very expert in performing such sacrifices, and the subordinate classes must join in such sacrifices. To speak for the Supreme Lord means to glorify the Lord by means of propagating the knowledge of the Lord as it is, broadcasting the factual nature of the Lord and the factual position of all other parts of the whole body. The Brahmanas, therefore, are required to know the Vedas, or the ultimate source of knowledge. Veda means knowledge and Anta means the end of it. According to Bhagavad Gita, the Lord is the source of everything, Aham Sarvasya Prabhava, and thus the end of all knowledge, Vedanta, is to know the Lord, to know our relationship with Him, and to act according to that relationship only. The parts of the body are related to the body. Similarly, the living being must know his relationship with the Lord. The human life is especially meant for this purpose, namely to know the factual relationship of every living being with the Supreme Lord. Without knowing this relationship, the human life is spoiled. The intelligent class of men, our Brahmanas, are therefore specially responsible for broadcasting this knowledge of our relationship with the Lord and leading the general mass of people to the right path. The administrative class is meant for protecting the living beings so that they can serve this purpose. The mercantile class is meant for producing food grains and distributing them to the complete human society so that the whole population is given a chance to live comfortably and discharge the duties of human life. The mercantile class is also required to give protection to the cows in order to get sufficient milk and milk products, which alone can give the proper health and intelligence to maintain a civilization perfectly meant for knowledge of the ultimate truth. And the laborer class, who are neither intelligent nor powerful, can help by physical service to the other higher classes and thus be benefited by their cooperation. Therefore, the universe is a complete unit in relationship with the Lord, and without this relationship with the Lord, the whole human society is disturbed and is without any peace and prosperity. This is confirmed in the Vedas, Brahmano Asya Mukham Ashid, Bahu Rajanna Kshatra, which actually means the Brahmanas are the mouth of the Lord, and the Kshatriyas, or the kings, are the arms of the Lord, or arms of the society. So, actually the structure of the Vedic society, the very foundation of the Vedic society was Varnashram. Whenever one thinks of performing spiritual life, that life is founded on the concept of Varnashram. So that's why those who are not following the Varnashram, dharma, in the Vedic society they were considered to be antarjal or outcast. A person who is not following varnashram, he was not considered to be civilized. And the division was made according to guna and karma, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, chatur varnam maya srishta guna karma vibhagasa. The four varnas have been created by me, Krishna says, according to the gunas and karmas, according to the divisions of gunas and according to the propensity of the individual. There are three modes of material nature: the mode of goodness, mode of passion, and mode of ignorance. And different living entities, different individuals are influenced by the different modes of material nature. Like some people are influenced by the mode of goodness. And when someone is influenced by the mode of goodness, he displayed some specific characteristic. And that characteristic is that he is more inclined to know about the absolute truth. He is less inclined to enjoy with his body. He is more into his spiritual side. A person who is influenced by the mode of goodness, he is more into the spiritual side, and he is more influenced, or rather more into understanding his constitutional position as a spirit soul, and he is naturally disinterested in physical enjoyment or sense gratification. He doesn't want to get involved in the mundane activities. That we can see that in the beginning of creation, when the four Kumaras came out of Brahma's mind, when Brahma created the four sons, first four sons, as soon as they came, Brahma wanted them to help him in the material creation. But they declined. They said, "Father, please forgive us. We are not interested in this mess. We don't want to get involved in this mundane activities." And Brahma got very angry. He felt that my sons are not listening to my instruction. But then again, right after that, Brahma realized that it's not actually proper for me to get angry with my sons. So Brahma controlled his anger. And that anger came from between Brahma's eyebrows, and they were the Rudras, Ekadas Rudras, 11 Rudras were produced like that. And then Brahma created 10 more sons from his mind, and out of them, first 9 were willing to help Brahma in the creation of the material nature or the universe. But the 10th one, the youngest one, Narad Muni, he was not interested. He was like his elder brothers, the first four sons of Brahma. And Narad Muni was not very much willing to get involved in mundane activities. So this way we can see that right from the beginning of creation, some people were influenced by the mode of goodness and some people were influenced by the mode of passion. The ones, those who are influenced by the mode of goodness, they were naturally detached from materialistic activities. And they were more concerned about understanding the spiritual nature. The same thing we notice with Sukadeva Goswami. Right after Sukadeva Goswami was born, first of all, he didn't want to come out of his mother's womb for 16 years. But then when he came out, right after coming out of his mother's womb, he just started to walk away from home. He didn't want to get entangled in the materialistic activities. So this is the influence of the mode of goodness. The people, those who are influenced by the mode of goodness, they are naturally detached. And that is the people, those who are influenced by the mode of goodness, they are called the Brahmanas. And these people are considered to be the head of the body of the Lord. All living beings are stated to be the parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord. And this is how the divisions are made. In the body of the Lord, or in general we can say in the human society, the head of the society or the mouth of the society is the people, or are the people, those who are influenced by the mode of goodness. And then there are some people, those who are influenced by the mode of passion or the mixed mode of goodness and passion. and they are kshatriya. So the people, those who are influenced by the mode of passion, what is the characteristics of mode of passion? The characteristics of mode of passion is that it influences one get involved in materialistic activity. In the mode of, due to the influence of mode of passion, one thinks that this material nature is the real thing and he wants to enjoy this material nature. So that is the characteristic of a kshatriya. He wants to enjoy this material nature due to the influence of the mode of passion. And a person who is in a pure mode of passion, they are actually so powerful. The influence of mode of passion actually makes one very powerful. And he is so powerful that he gets whatever he wants. When a kshatriya or a person influenced by the mode of passion, whatever he desires, Jai Shri Gaurinitai, whatever he desires, he just goes and grabs it. Like we see that in the Vedic society, the kings used to do that. The king would look at some land and say, well, this is a nice land, maybe I should take it over. And he would go and just grab the land. And what to talk about land, when a king would like to get a princess, he would do that. He would just go and grab the princess, pick her up in the chariot and drive away. And the whole assembly, the kings and princes and the army of the opposite side would try to stop him. And there would be a terrible fight. And if the kshatriya is real kshatriya, he'll defeat all of them and take away his bride. And the Vedic history is full of, especially Mahabharata, is full of such stories or such narrations. Like Krishna did that to Rukmini, Arjun did that to Subhadra. Arjun went, he fell in love with Subhadra, and actually Balaram, who had a soft corner for Duryodhan, wanted Subhadra to be married to Duryodhan. And Vasudeva and Krishna didn't like the idea, but after all Balaram is the elder brother, they could not really say anything. So Arjun got the news and he fell in love with Subhadra. So he went there in Dwarka during the month of Chaturmas as a sannyasi. And then one day he just picked up Subhadra, of course with the permission of Krishna and Vasudeva. When Subhadra was going to the temple, and Arjun got hold of a chariot and he just drove away, and the whole army tried to stop him, but no one could stop him. He was so powerful. And of course ultimately Balaram got very angry and Balaram wanted to kill Arjuna. But then Krishna and Vasudeva pacified Balaram. There are so many wonderful stories like that. And that's actually the nature of a kshatriya. And kshatriya would not hesitate to give his life for the sake of his objective. If a kshatriya wants something, he would just go try to get it. And even if he has to give his life, he would just give it up. And that means, although the kshatriyas want to enjoy the material nature, they are not actually into the bodily concept of life. They are completely oblivious of their body's pain. Like it is said, a kshatriya, when he is fighting a battle, if his right hand is chopped off, then he will fight with his left hand. If his left hand is chopped off, then he will fight with his legs. And if his legs are chopped off, he would still keep on fighting till he, till the spirit leaves the body. So that is a kshatriya. And when a kshatriya dies like that, he goes back to heavenly planet. So that is the nature's arrangement. So that is a real kshatriya. Kshatriya is not like today's kshatriya. Actually today there is no Brahmin, no kshatriya. And that's why Prabhupada was so concerned about creating a society of Brahmins. And when the Brahmins are created, then automatically others will fall in line. So that is the nature of a kshatriya. And the word kshatriya literally means, to begin with, the word Brahmin, Brahmana, means Brahma Janati Iti Brahmana. The one who knows the absolute truth, Brahma, he is a Brahmin. Not only the one who is just wearing a Brahmin thread. In India nowadays, anybody who has a Brahmin thread claims that he is a Brahmin, because he happens to be born in a Brahmin family. And Prabhupada used to joke, he has a two penny worth Brahmin thread around his torso, and he's pulling a rickshaw, and he claims that he's a Brahmin. But a Brahmin is a person who knows the absolute truth, who is self-realized. Brahma janati iti brahmana. One who knows the absolute truth is a Brahmin. And Kshatriya is the one, Kshata trayote iti Kshatriya. Kshat means injury. And the one who saves, who protects the society from external and internal injury or damage is called a Kshatriya. So when somebody wants to enjoy something, it automatically becomes his duty to protect that possession. Like if you have a car, and if you want to enjoy the car, you have to give protection to the car. That is natural. That's why you have insurance and so on and so forth. So whenever we want to enjoy something, automatically we develop the responsibility of giving protection. Now the Kshatriyas, they wanted to enjoy the material nature. They wanted to enjoy Dharitri, the earth planet. So automatically the responsibility came upon them to give protection to the earth planet. So that's why it is their duty to give protection, and that's why they are called Kshatriya. Kshatat trayote iti Kshatriya. Kshat means injury, trayote means protection. So one who gives protection to injury, to the society, is called a Kshatriya. Then there are some people, those who are in the mixed mode of passion and ignorance. Those who are in the mixed mode of passion and ignorance, they have the desire to enjoy, but they do not have the go to get it. So, because they are mixed with the mode of ignorance, they are lazy and less active. They do not have the prowess of a Kshatriya. Like as I mentioned, a Kshatriya, when he wants something, he would just go and get it. Like a lion. Lion is actually, among animals, lion is influenced by the mode of passion. And lion's nature is like that of a Kshatriya. Lion just goes, whatever he wants, gets it. When a lion wants an animal, just goes and kills it. And no one can actually stop a lion. No one can stop a lion. So no one could actually stop a Kshatriya. But the people, those who are in the mixed mode of passion and ignorance, they have the desire to enjoy, but do not have the go or the guts or the prowess to get it. So for them, the society gave the responsibility to cater to the demands of the society and thus get the object of their enjoyment. So they are called the Vaishyas. Like the society, human society has many necessities. Like basic necessities, the food grain, then the clothes, then the house and household paraphernalia. And it was the duty of the Vaishyas to cater to the demands of the society. Society needed food, and it was the responsibility of the Vaishya to get them food. The society needed clothes, and it was the responsibility of the Vaishyas to get the clothes. And then they would bring the required objects and or supply it to the society. And then in the process, they'll make some money. And with the money, they'll buy whatever they want. So that is the business of a Vaishya. And then, there are some people, those who are in the mode of ignorance. Mode of ignorance means mudha. The people, those who are influenced by the mode of ignorance, that means they do not have the intelligence. They neither have the intelligence, nor do they have the strength. Or, not the strength, but the goal. So they cannot act independently. So the society, in the society they were known as the Sudras, and their business was to serve under the direction of some superior class of people. Like a Sudra was never allowed to be independent. Sudra was always subordinate to either Brahmin, Kshatriya or a Vaishya. Because they do not have the ability to act independently. And in return of their service, in lieu of the service, they used to get some salary. So in the Vedic society, no one would take salary but the Sudras. Whoever would take salary, he's a Sudra. And that shows that today, how today's society actually have become a Sudra society. Today's society has become a Sudra society because everyone wants to work for money. If they don't get money, they won't work. So it's a typical Sudra mentality. But a Brahmin, Kshatriya or a Vaishya will never work for salary. They'll never take salary. Only the Sudras will take salary. Brahmin, Kshatriya and Vaishya are independent. Vaishya needs the money and he will make the money by his business. Kshatriyas would not care to get the money. He will get whatever he wants. Kshatriya will not trade. He will just grab. So that is a Kshatriya's duty. And a Brahmin, he was not at all concerned about materialistic activities, materialistic requirements. So that's why he was not at all concerned about them. So Brahmins usually used to live away from the human society, away from the crowd. Generally, the Brahmins used to live in a place called Upoban, like they would clear out some part of the forest next to on the bank of a river, and there they would plant fruits and flower trees, and there they would lead their life in meditating on the Lord and cultivating the spiritual science. Jaya Shushushi Gaunitra. The Kshatriyas, they would live in the heart of the city, in their palaces. The Vaishyas, they would live in their designated areas. The Vaishyas also were very opulent. They were very rich. And the Sudras, they would live in some other designated areas, where the Sudras are generally very unclean. Not very unclean, but generally they're not very active and they're not very they do not have such good taste. That is a Sudra mentality. They do not have a good taste. But the Brahmins and Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, they all had very good taste. The Brahmins, although they were renounced, but they would live in a very, very pleasing environment. The places would be full of flowers and trees, fruit trees, and there will be beautiful birds and animals. And there are descriptions in the Vedic literatures about these Upavans, where the Brahmanas used to live. And even if they lived in the cities, they would not live in the palaces. They would have a rather humble setup. Like Prabhupada used to give an example of the last Brahmin in the present time is actually Chanakya Pandit. And Prabhupada said that Chanakya Pandit, he was the minister, the prime minister of Chandragupta. And Chandragupta was the monarch of India. And actually Chanakya made Chandragupta the monarch of India. He was the kingmaker. And although he made Chandragupta the king, but Chanakya never lived in the palace. He used to live in a hut, and he used to live by uncha vritti. He would not even beg. What to talk about taking salary from the king or taking money from the king, or taking even food grains from the king. He would not even beg from anybody. He would go to the field, and after harvesting, whatever grains were left on the field, he would just pick that up, and with that he would maintain himself. And then he had a little dispute. He realized that Chandragupta was becoming very puffed up, very arrogant after becoming a king, because Kshatriya nature is puffed up, and especially in the age of Kali. So the moment Chandragupta detected it, he immediately left. He immediately left. So that is the quality of a Brahmin. Although he is a king maker, but he is never attached to his kingdom. And so this is how the social divisions were made. And people were engaged according to their propensity. Now we can see, it is said that in the age of Kali, everything will turn upside down. And it has been said in Bhavishya Puran that how everything will turn upside down. It said that in the age of Kali, the lamp will burn with the wicks downwards. And we can see in the electric bulbs. So, it is we can see that how, what a tremendous foresight those people had. They could foresee into the age of Kali. And they forecasted that in the age of Kali, everything will turn upside down. And we see how by the influence of Kali, everything is actually turning upside down in the society. When Kali came, when the Kali Yuga began, Parikshit Maharaj actually banished Kali from his kingdom. But Kali somehow got 4 or 5 places to live in. So Kali realized that as long as Parikshit Maharaj was going to be on this planet, he could not set his foot on this planet. He realized that. He could not spread his influence as long as Parikshit Maharaj was alive. So Kali began to make plans to kill Parikshit Maharaj, to get rid of Parikshit Maharaj. So he first influenced the Brahmin. He influenced the Sudra, the Brahmin boy, Sringi. And he made Sringi to curse Parikshit Maharaj. And this is how Kali first entered into the, Kali first destroyed the Brahminical culture. He entered through the Brahmin, and then through the Brahmin, Kali destroyed the Kshatriya culture. And when Parikshit Maharaj left, gradually the kings became weaker and weaker. And then, since there was no Brahmin, proper Brahmin to give the guidance to the king, it was, the kings could not really, figure out what is to be done and what's not to be done. Forgot their duty, forgot their responsibility. And they began to rule their kingdom just for the sake of their sense enjoyment. And then they started to fight among each other. And that their internal fight became the cause of their destruction. Like the first, the Muslim invasion, the first foreign invasion actually took place only about 1100 years ago. Although Brahminical culture was destroyed and Kshatriyas were about to be destroyed, but still Kshatriyas were so powerful that no one actually could enter into India. Right from the border, they got the opposition, they were smashed and kicked out. The first invader, the first Muslim invader that could set in his, could take over India or establish his domination over India was Muhammad Ghori. And Muhammad Ghori, he attacked India 18 times. And all the 18 times he was defeated by Prithviraj Chauhan. He was a Kshatriya king. And after defeating, Prithviraj Chauhan would let him go. Just released him. Okay, fine, go back. Because it's like, fighting with a child. Like, you don't really take the fight seriously. After bashing him up, you just let him go back home. And, but on the 19th time, Muhammad Ghori took advantage of an internal feud between Prithviraj and Jai Chand. Jai Chand was another Rajput king. And he got Jai Chand to side with him. He made a pact with Jai Chand, and with a joint effort with Jai Chand, Prithviraj defeated, Muhammad Ghori defeated Prithviraj Chauhan. And then after defeating him, he captivated him and he beheaded him. And he commented that the mistake that Prithviraj made for 18 times, he is not going to make the same mistake. So this way we can see that that is the first time the foreign invaders could enter into India, because the Kshatriyas became weak, because there was no Brahmin to give them the guidance. And when the Kshatriyas were not there to protect the society, the Vaishyas also became helpless. So the business was not actually, or Vaishnavas also lost the sense of morality. Like previously, business was to cater to the demands of the society. Whatever the society needed, the Vaishya would supply that to the society. But then, the Vaishya started to create an artificial demand, which is very, very prevalent nowadays. Due to the industrial revolution, the industrialists, the Vaishyas, the production has increased to a great extent, become able to produce to a great extent, and in order to sell their produce, they are creating an artificial demand in the society through advertisements and such media. Like they are making everyone feel that unless you have a color TV, your life is useless. Unless you have a Mercedes Benz, your life is useless. And then everyone is working like a madman to make the money to get those objects. So this way, the Vaishyas have become very unscrupulous. And they are not actually catering to the demands of the society. They are not actually concerned about the demands of the society. They are simply creating some artificial demands in order to sell their product and make money. And this way, today's world generally is being dominated by the Vaishyas. But then it is actually gradually tending towards the Sudra domination. Now we can see that the Sudras are actually the working class, the laborers. And now we can see that it's the laborers, those who are trying to take over. And even if we just look at it like, in the perspective of modern society, we can see that the Brahmins or intellectuals or the scientists and philosophers, they are actually dominated by the politicians, those who are the administrators. The politicians are dominated by the industrialists. And the industrialists are dominated by the labor union. So the society has turned practically upside down. It is the labor that has come on top, and that's where the society is tending. Now the society is tending towards communism. From capitalism, the intermediate state is democracy. But democracy is actually leading the society towards communism. In the initial stage, it was the Brahminical culture. The Brahmins were leading the society. Even in the Western society, we see in the beginning, the church was actually ruling, dominating the society. Then from, I think, Henry VIII onward, the church was rejected. The king became total sovereign, became the complete independent. So then came the monarchy or feudalism. And then came capitalism, the Vaishya domination. And now it is tending towards communism. And communism means Sudra society. The legs, the head has gone downwards and the legs have gone upwards. So now the society is standing on its head. The legs are trying to dominate and the head is totally downwards. Totally being rejected of its specific values. So if we want to establish religiosity, if we want to establish Vedic culture, then we have to establish Varnashram Dharma. That's why Prabhupada put so much emphasis on Varnashram Dharma. And if the Varnashram Dharma is established, then everyone will be satisfied. Everyone will be satisfied. Because naturally the head's business is to give direction. Naturally, the hand's business is to give protection. Naturally, the belly's business is to supply the food or supply the energy to the body. The belly actually supplies the energy to the body. And on the legs, the whole body is standing. So Sudras are the legs, Vaishyas are the belly, Kshatriyas are the arms and chest, and Brahmanas are the head and mouth. And so if we do that, like we can see when the body's different parts perform its specific duties, then the body becomes healthy and every part and parcel of the body also becomes healthy. But if somebody tells you to walk on your head, will your head be satisfied? And if you ask your leg to dominate the body, you won't be satisfied. Your leg will not be satisfied, your hand will not be satisfied, your belly will not be satisfied, and your head will not be satisfied, and your body will be miserable. For how long can you, no matter what a big yogi you are, for how long can you stand on your head? The headstand, you cannot really do it for very long because it's painful. And that's what is happening. The whole society is suffering. The whole society is painful. Everybody in the society is painful because of this artificial position. But if we are, if we establish Varnashram, then everybody will be perfectly situated. There are some people, those who want to be intellectually inclined, those who want to give direction to others, and then naturally they are disinterested, they are unconcerned about physical enjoyment or sense gratification. That's the natural propensity. Of course, one thing also here we have to understand that the declination of the Vedic society started because the Brahmins were not actually Brahmins. They were holding the position of a Brahmin and they exploited the whole society with their perverted desires. And that's how the actual declination started. Now, if someone is a Brahmin, he must display the Brahminical quality. Like if someone is a Brahmin, then let him become detached. That will be the proof. If someone says that I am a Brahmin because I have a Brahmin thread, and the rest of the society is should serve me, then that is wrong. Like the same way, I mean, we can to make it more specific, like if we say that we are sannyasis, we are the head of the society, and everybody should offer us all the facilities, and we will not, because we are the head of the society, that is wrong. Because the sannyasi is the highest standard of Brahmin, highest class of Brahmin. And he's naturally disinterested towards sense enjoyment. So if someone is a sannyasi, then he must be detached. One cannot claim that he is a sannyasi and at the same time indulge in all kinds of sense gratification. That will be hypocritical. That will be conflicting. So a Brahmin or a sannyasi must be detached. And that is the indication. If one is a Brahmin, if one wants to be a Brahmin in the society, he must display his intellectual inclination and at the same time he must display his disinterest in material enjoyment. And then those who are Kshatriyas, they must take up the responsibility of administration. He must take up the responsibility of administration, and as a result he'll get some sense gratification. He will have a nice apartment. He'll be married. Because in order to get fixed up, one must have a wife. That's why a king in the Vedic time could not ascend the throne unless he had a queen. The king had to have a queen in order to ascend the throne. So it is very important that a person who is in administration, his nature is passionate and he likes to do it. He likes to take the responsibility, he likes to take the headache of the whole society. And as a result, he is given some facility. And then Vaishyas should cater to the demands of the society. Society needs money, so Vaishyas will supply it. How they will do it, they will figure it out. But it has to be, of course, legal means, not illegal means. And then those who are working for money, and those who are taking salary, let them be termed as Sudras. So it is very important that in order to establish proper spiritual standard, proper spiritual status, we establish Varnashram. And of course, how we'll establish it is a million-dollar question, because there is some conflicting ideas in our society how that will be established. But here, one thing, of course, also I have to mention, there is some opposition to this Varnashram theory, saying that Mahaprabhu actually did not preach for Varnashram. It is true, Mahaprabhu did not preach for Varnashram. Mahaprabhu actually rejected Varnashram. When Mahaprabhu was having a discussion with Ramananda Roy, then Mahaprabhu asked, what is the goal of human life? Then Ramananda Roy said that performing Varnashram Dharma is the goal of human life. And he gave the quotation from the scriptures, Varnashrama Charo Bhata Purushena Parakpuman Vishnu Aradhate Pantha Nainam Tattosho Karanam. He gave that proof from the scripture that performing varnashram is the goal of human life and is the means to satisfy Vishnu. But Mahaprabhu rejected that. He said, that's external. Tell me something beyond that. So true, Mahaprabhu did not speak about varnashram. But here we have to understand that Mahaprabhu was actually establishing the Paramhamsa platform of Vaishnava, the Uttamadhikar platform of Vaishnava. And now Paramhamsa stage is transcendental to varnashram. But we must understand that we are not transcendental to varnashram. We are not in a Paramhamsa stage. At least I am not in a Paramhamsa stage. So I must follow varnashram. So our sannyas order is actually varnashram. Sannyas order is in varnashram. Prabhupada made different brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyasi. That order we have, ashrams we have, but varnas we have not been able to establish. Prabhupada simply put emphasis on making brahmanas, and now the brahmanas have been made, the head has been set. Now the whole body has to be set up. Rest of the body has to be set up. So the ones, those who give the argument that Mahaprabhu did not accept Varnashram Dharma, so we do not follow Varnashram Dharma, that will be very, very conceited idea. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, actually, he did not approve of that concept. He said that these Paramahamsa Goswamis, they are our gurus, they are our acharya, mahajan, and like the Goswamis in Vrindavan. And they are in the Paramhamsa stage. But we should not artificially imitate their position. We should place their lotus feet on our head and try to preach their glories all over the world. So that immediately puts us in a level below Paramhamsa stage, that means the Varnashram stage. And that's why Prabhupada put so much emphasis on establishing Varnashram. And I was just actually having a talk with Krishna Kshetra Prabhu last night. Krishna Kshetra Prabhu was telling me about Vishnupad's idea that in order to... But then, last night I was thinking, before going to bed, I was thinking how to establish Varnashram Dharma. And by Krishna's mercy, got many good ideas. And two most important things I realized, that in order to unify the society, we need a project that everybody will be involved. Because the unifying factor for us is actually projects. Because we are not the devotees in Krishna consciousness are not interested in money or other material benefit. But the only thing that could unify us is some projects. Like in Prabhupada's time, there used to be so many projects, Vrindavan project, Mayapur project, this project, that project, and that's how devotees used to get fired up. And now I was thinking that we don't actually have projects. We are simply maintaining ourselves. In most part of the world, we are simply maintaining. We are just paying the rent of the house we are living in, and we are just paying for the bhogas, and of course paying for our insurance, cars and apartments and so on and so forth, right? But that's why devotees are losing that enthusiasm, and I felt that this varnashram can be the project that everybody can get into. And the other important thing is that everybody must be situated according to his propensity. Now there is a chaos in our society. Everybody is a devotee and nobody knows who is what. Only some cases we can make a gross distinction. He's a sannyasi, he's a grihastha, he's a brahmachari. Sometimes the sannyasis behave like a grihasthas and brahmacharis behave like a sannyasi. So this is actually Varna Shankar. In our society, there is an acute Varna Shankar. And so that's why we have to try to situate different individuals in their... But we notice also that sometimes the sannyasis behave like a grihasthas and brahmacharis behave like a sannyasi. So this is actually Varna Shankar. In our society, there is an acute Varna Shankar. And so that's why we have to try to situate different individuals in their respective propensities, according to their respective propensity. And then this morning only I was having a talk with Krishna Kshetra Prabhu, and then I get a subject to discuss in the class, you know. It is Krishna's mercy, such a beautiful shlok. And actually while giving the class I got so many ideas, and and also Krishna, I was asking Krishna Kshetra Prabhu the same thing, but how it will be established there in such a chaotic situation, in such a chaotic atmosphere, how Varnashram will be established. Then Krishna Kshetra Prabhu just told me that by people like you preaching, and I can see that yes, we have to preach about that, give at least the responsible members of the society should be given that understanding, or there should be exchange of ideas that how it can be done. Hare Krishna. Maharaj, do you have some comments? Does anybody have any question? Oh, I see. Oh, yeah. Well, fine, you know, like sometimes, you know, some people take sannyas due to the mode of passion, right? So, they start off with a wrong note, so naturally they end up in a big trouble. So they can go back to their respective propensity. According to their respective propensity, they can, you know, be situated in their ashram. Like, what's the harm if somebody realizes that he made a mistake in accepting sannyas? He can go back to grihastha ashram. But he should not remain a sannyasi and run a business. Right? Actually, our society should be strict about that. If you're a sannyasi, then remain a sannyasi, become a sannyasi. Well, I mean, if that person is not inclined to work hard, but if he is intellectually inclined, that means he's a Brahmana. So in that atmosphere, we should also make room for Brahmanas. Like, if he is intellectually inclined, then let him study, let him lead the other devotees in by teaching them, and so on and so forth. But if he is neither a Brahmin nor a Sudra, if he doesn't want to act intellectually, nor want to perform some physical service, then, you know, he is just a parasite. Right? So in Vedic society, there is no room for parasites. No, I mean, we have to begin from the premise that we are Vaishnavas. Right? We basically would take up different duties in the society, not mainly due to our propensities, but mainly to set an example. But our propensities, our specific propensities, will be the guideline. Right? You see, like in Vaishnava society, there is actually, we are all Vaishnavas, and there is no question of Sudra. We actually given up our material attachments and came to the spiritual platform. We didn't come here to get a job. Right? A Sudra works only for a salary. Right? So in our society, there should not be Sudra. Actually, but somebody may take up the job of a Sudra. Like the way, for the sake of Krishna, the king also sweeps the road. Like Maharaj Pratap Rudra used to sweep the road of the Jagannath's path to Jagannath way to Gundicha temple. Right? So the same way, for the sake of rendering service to the Lord, a devotee will take up any responsibility, any service.
But that will not brand him as such. Vaishyas will work in the field also. Vaishyas will work in the field. But if he is working in the field and says that give me so many Deutschmarks every week, otherwise I won't work, then he becomes a student. So anyone who is taking salary from the society is a student. But other three will just depend. Like Vaishyas will have, they will get a patch of land and cultivate it or tend the cows. This is how our society will grow. Now actually everything is under one roof. Right? Everything is under, you know, ISKCON's roof. But now I think there's a time when individuals have to take up their individual projects. Like somebody who is inclined to do business, let him run a business. Actually there are some people, those who are running business and doing very good, and their support, like one wonderful example is Abhiram Prabhu, who is actually a very good friend of mine. I mean, he is very close to Miami. And he is making a lot of money, right, by his business. And he is supporting the society, different projects of the society, he's supporting with that money. And so that is how different individuals will take up projects, right? And of course, ultimately the head is the Brahmins, and the Brahmins will supervise. Actually, if everybody wants to become independent, then he may end up in a problem. But if the Brahmins are there, those who are, first of all, those who are detached, and at the same time they are well conversant with the scriptures, they only can give the proper advice, right? Like if you come to me for advice, and if I am not detached, I cannot, my advice will be tainted with my desires. Right? So I won't be able to give proper advice. So in order to give proper advice to the society, the Brahmana has to become detached. The Brahmins will be connected to specific temples, right? But will be connected to the temple, but that doesn't mean that he'll become attached to the temple. Right? If somebody says, now you go to Timbuktu, right? He will say, okay, fine. So wherever the society, the leaders of the society will direct him, he will go there. He won't have any strings attached. And another most, as a sannyasi, I feel that the most important thing for the society is that the sannyasis travel and preach. Unfortunately, sannyasis nowadays are managing, and that's causing a lot of damage. Like I was managing for 3 years, and I know it, my life was hellish. And I feel so fine when I'm traveling and preach. Like I get inspired and they say that I inspire others also. Yeah, this Mataji has a question. No, no. Monarchy is in the mode of passion, right? Capitalism is in the mixed mode of passion and ignorance, right? And communism is in the mode of ignorance, in the pure mode of ignorance, right? And democracy is just the stepping stone to communism, right? Democracy is the step in between. Capitalism and communism. Cause of? Yeah, as I said, that the other people, the other group, those who are anti-Varnashram, they say that Mahaprabhu did not want Varnashram. Right? We are Vaishnavas, so we are transcendental to Varnashram. But my point is, we are trying to become Vaishnavas. We have not become Vaishnavas. Vaishnava stage is even transcendental to Brahmanical stage. So after one transcends the platform of a Brahmin, then he becomes a Vaishnava. But we haven't even become a Brahmin yet. Right? So it is pointless to say, it's actually very self-conceited to say that I have become Vaishnava. Vaishnava never says I have become Vaishnava. Vaishnava says, I am the humble servant of the servant of the servant of the Vaishnava. Right? So that means, that puts us in a position of a Sudra. So let's begin from there. Let's become the servant of the Vaishnava. Right? And establish the Varnashram. Yes, sir. So there cannot be any Kanishtha Adhikari approach. Actually, so.
If one puts teaching as a person, then you establish one for that purpose. The same. For example, at all levels of society, when the persons who are engaging in some interesting activities, they have a propensity for that, but they don't have actually selfish desires, which they usually have fulfilled. They're doing it actually at a higher frequency. They have a propensity to engage in teaching. But their actual satisfaction is people are being satisfied and understanding. That's their actual source of satisfaction. Whereas there's also the auditory approach. The teaching is not considered as important as the other Indian or personal authority. And And I see this as a conflict. I've heard this kind of back and forth discussion between the world to accept that we should have a lifetime. But, for instance, a person on the Kanishtha Adhikari platform seems to me cannot, sometimes they lose, they don't have the perception of the enthusiasm of the teaching. They most likely classify the world direction as a superior enthusiasm, motivation to speak. As being something on the most significant. Like, for instance, if they're not being a peace very vigorously, that others just allow them to communicate. And Prabhupada said we have to be an equal, so he may, for that purpose, even temporarily or momentarily, in all that from language, which will help come in to communicate with people. Anyway, finally, a common platform of understanding. And I mean, Prabhupada, when I joined this company, I was always told how they want to become becoming of peace, how they want to become.
Yes.
But I think that understanding very well. That would be the platform.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I think a lot of discussion is necessary. There's a lot of misconception. And I mean, in this thing also, that's the basic misconception is that there cannot be any Kanishtha Adhikari concept. Because it's the Madhyama Adhikari who actually preaches and establishes the standard. Right? Kanishtha, he doesn't have that clear understanding of Krishna consciousness. Right? He is Prakriti. He is still very much into the material platform. And as far as propensity, also it will be initial guidance will be the propensity. Like there may not be, that propensity may not be long lasting. But that propensity is the guideline. Like, to give an example, some devotees sometimes want to get married, right? But that time it's his propensity, it's his desire to get married. But after he gets married At least the sannyasis, they confine, that they hate it. But they carry on with their marriage as a duty, right? So we may, as a propensity, take up a, say, a kshatriya responsibility, right? I mean, that is our initial propensity, but then we have to pursue it as a sense, with a sense of duty. Now that I have become a kshatriya, let me not run away from the battlefield. Right? And the same way, if somebody has an initial tendency of becoming a Brahmin, then let him pursue that tendency. Then he should not fall down from the Brahminical platform and become a kshatriya or a sudra. I think a lot of exchange is needed among the devotees in order to get the, to churn out the real concept. And actually I was feeling this to be a good topic to preach to the devotees, you know, like, I mean, now there is so much, you know, depression in our society, and actually there has to be some hope of light, and I think this can throw a lot of hopes. Yes?
Right. Also, that also reveals another important factor. That is, you see, the society, the Vedic society, actually, in the Vedic society, the three ashram, brahmacharis, vanaprasthis, and sannyasis, are actually protected by the grihasthas. They are sheltered by the grihasthas. But unfortunately now, our society, ISKCON, is actually giving protection to, or the shelter, to all the four orders. But gradually, as we become more and more fixed up in Varnashram, the grihasthas will have to take up the responsibility of protecting the, or taking care of the society. That is, you know, giving protection to the brahmacharis, vanaprasthas and sannyasis, and also providing with the necessary money and other amenities to maintain the temple function. Temple should be maintained by the grihasthas. And that will happen when the grihasthas, you know, become independent in their respective occupation. Any other question? Yes. Yeah, the thing is that, you know, like to begin with, you know, we don't judge ourselves. We leave it up to the body, you know, the Brahminical body to judge. And then the second thing is that, as I mentioned before, like now in our society is in a state of Varna Shankar, right? Now that Varna Shankar, you know, has to be rectified, and proper Varnas has to be established. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.